The Serial Entrepreneur, brought to you by Startups Magazine. A podcast bringing you leading businesses and founders who have a story to tell and explain some of their biggest challenges.
Try not to be too hard on yourself. Like, I meet so many founders who are like, you know, I should have done this, and then the pandemic happened and I didn't do this. And you spend so much time like second guessing yourself when really mistakes will happen. Like, we're human.
It really does improve over time, and I think sometimes when you're starting out, you kind of almost expect yourself to have, you know, super high standards from the start. You know, you want to do your best at the start, absolutely, but you're never going to be perfect.
Plus, share their biggest secret, their favourite breakfast cereals.
My favourite cereal is an Australian cereal called Nutri-Grain.
Rice Krispies.
It's pretty boring. Weetabix.
I have a clear winner. It is Cocoa Pops.
Hello and welcome back to the Serial Entrepreneur podcast brought to you by Startups Magazine. Today I am joined by my lovely guest, Jimmy McLaughlin, OBE, a former special advisor to the Prime Minister on Business, Technology and Entrepreneurship, and who is now the founder and host of Jimmy's Jobs of the Future podcast. Jimmy, it's such a pleasure to have you with me today. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Anna, and thanks so much for having me.
No, thank you so much. It's always good to have a fellow podcaster, as we've been saying on the show. So hopefully it'll be an extra special episode. But before we kind of delve into the nitty gritty and the heart of the episode, my first question to you is my first question to everyone. And that would be, what is your favourite breakfast cereal and why?
Well, so I have given this a lot of thought since you sent over the questions, Anna, and I chatted about it with some of my team. And they said that I couldn't say mint chocolate Huel, which is what I have every day, pretty much, because they said it's not cereal. And I said, well, I'd like to put it over Bran Flakes would be my answer to that then. And I guess, but on cereals, I have a two-year-old daughter, and it's the first question I ask her in the morning, is it going to be porridge or Weetabix? And she's now got to the age where she thinks very carefully before answering. But I suppose my guilty pleasure would be crunchy nut cornflakes.
Oh, classic, yes. What a great choice. And also, just a little side question, when we're having Weetabix for your daughter, is there a sprinkling of sugar or anything with that, or just plain?
Not at the moment. She pretty much just has it straight up, and it doesn't tend to hang around long.
I can imagine. Well, that was such an array of breakfasts there, so thank you so much for that answer. It always tells me a lot about people to kick things off. Well, I guess now my first point of call is, again, quite an obvious one to start with, but for people that may not have come across you or the podcast before, tell me a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so I have long been fascinated by entrepreneurship and how entrepreneurs start and get their ideas from. And most recently, I left Downing Street 2.5 years ago, and I actually, partly because we were just having our daughter, and I just knew that I wouldn't be able to kind of have the commitment to be a good spad and a good dad. It wasn't going to be possible to do both, and I'd done it for 3 years, so it was time for a change. But I didn't really know what I was going to do next. So we left, had the baby, and we went out to Stanford to study as a family and have an adventure out there, sort of mecca of entrepreneurship, which was an incredible couple of months on their Ignite program. And then it was March 2020, and everyone remembers their March 2020. We got back on one of the last flights to the UK, and my wife is a doctor. And so she said, look, I think I've got to go and do my bit. And it turned out she ended up going back much quicker. She was basically back at work the next week. And so I became a stay-at-home dad to my six-month-old. And it was quite an experience because, you know, I'd sort of, you know, 6 months earlier been advising the Prime Minister, flying around the world in a kind of master of the universe style scenario. And then, you know, 6 months later, it was me and my baby daughter at home each day, every day for 12 hours with just our 1 hour walk around the park each day. And of course, at the time, it was the worst time to be doom scrolling anyway. And of course, I didn't want to be on my phone in front of my daughter much. So it's when we really discovered audio as a kind of medium, I suppose. And so we were listening to podcasts and the radio all day, effectively. And that's where the idea for Jimmy's Jobs of the Future came from, because I sat there and thought, well, you know, can I do something? Can I help with the massive unemployment crisis that we're going to have coming up? And it reminded me of my time in Number 10, because it would often be my job to take the phone call from the FTSE 100 chief exec or chair saying they were about to make 2,000 redundancies, take that phone call at 5 to 8 in the morning just before the stock market opened. And so I'd have to go and tell the Prime Minister this in the morning meeting. And often her response would be, yeah, well, we're still at record high employment. Where are all these jobs coming from? And it was entrepreneurs each day, you know, perhaps hiring 6 a dozen people. And of course, that doesn't make headlines. Obviously, it does in your magazine, but in the sort of the mainstream media, it doesn't. And I was always endlessly fascinated by these roles. And so that's where the idea for Jimmy's Jobs of the Future came from, because I'm fortunate enough to be able to text a few entrepreneurial friends who I'd met through Number 10 and said, look, I've got this idea for a podcast. Will you come on? And yeah, I sit back and look now and think this is not what I thought I'd be doing when I left Downing Street. But it's an amazing privilege to speak to these entrepreneurs about where they think the future's going, because so many podcasts focus on the past and people's stories to get there, which is, you know, fascinating as well. But yeah, I want to know where we're going.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's incredible. And to think probably that if the pandemic hadn't hit, you wouldn't have necessarily gone down the path of being the stay-at-home dad and having that time with your daughter. I guess, obviously, being a parent, whether it be a stay-at-home parent or a working parent, to a six-month-old is going to be difficult for anyone. So please forgive me if you think my question is silly, but how did you find being a stay-at-home dad all of a sudden and having that six-month-old and all that time with her?
It was extraordinary. I mean, I look back at it now and I'm just so grateful for it. And I think, you know, I was chatting with a few other dads about this now, that you sort of can't imagine life without kids once you've had them anyway, partly, but also can't imagine not sort of seeing them. You know, I spoke this week at the National Farmers Union conference, and it was the first time I'd sort of had to set an alarm in 2.5 years because I had to get an early train and I wasn't back till late as well. And it was sort of quite emotional not seeing my daughter for the day. And I just thought that, you know, in the pre-pandemic world, that would have been the norm pretty much for somebody that, you know, wanted to do a kind of successful career. You know, you might be able to get back maybe 2 nights a week. But now we're all quite used to it. It's amazing. It was definitely a bit of a challenge with a 6-month-old, because it's just, you know, they're just kind of getting going at that stage. But yeah, like it was hard because we just couldn't see anyone. And so, you know, I feel like I have a very close relationship with the Today presenters and the World at One on Radio 4, because we did meal times around all the flagship Radio 4 shows. So it was quite an experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think that was kind of one, maybe silver lining, or one kind of positive element to come out of the pandemic, was that a lot of parents did get to spend a lot of family time and time with their children, like you said, that they wouldn't have necessarily done before. I'm obviously keen to ask a million and one questions on the podcast and that kind of part of your life. But before we delve into that, I want to just go back to the pre-podcast, pre-pandemic life per se, and ask kind of where your business journey started and how then you became a special advisor to the UK Prime Minister, because that is pretty interesting and an exciting role it must have been for yourself as well.
Yeah, well, you weren't the only one that's asked the question. Plenty of people were asking it when I was there, I'm sure, as well, Anna. But business entrepreneurship journey probably starts when I was at university, and I was I do kind of various photo events, and I do it for society balls and such like. And we kind of came up with a model for that. So that was where it sort of first started. I didn't really sort of carry on with it, but to kind of point back to that moment. And then I just got more interested in it as I was working kind of in political consultancy. And I went and joined the Institute of Directors, which is a sort of, it's almost like a chambers of commerce for small and medium sized businesses. And it's got its very grand offices in Pall Mall that you can go to. And I was there alongside somebody, and we set up a young entrepreneurs group because it was rather full of white men over the age of 50, and we were looking to kind of diversify. And this was just as the kind of co-working revolution in 2014 was really getting going, and effectively the Institute of Directors was, you know, almost the world's oldest co-working space. That's why people were members. But business was changing. I mean, it was, yeah, I joined in 2014, and that was the year they dropped the dress code about having to wear a tie. So it sort of shows you where we were. I mean, it's about as far from Shoreditch as you can possibly imagine. And we set up this young entrepreneurs club called the IOD 99. And so it was going to be originally for 99 members to join for £99. And it was such a success that we sort of rapidly expanded it and we're doing 99 a month. And we got to about 2000, me and a guy called Alex Mitchell, who's very big in the entrepreneurship community world, were doing it. And I was so empowered by these kind of entrepreneurs and them all striking out, doing their own thing, that that was when I initially applied to do the course at Stanford. But during that week, Brexit happened and, you know, the leadership of the country changed. And I got a phone call saying, you know, would you come in and kind of done what you've done with the Institute of Directors and the Young Entrepreneurs Group. You know, will you come in and bring some of that into Downing Street and kind of be the PM's point person between the business world and entrepreneurship world and Downing Street? And, you know, when you get an opportunity to do something like that, it is once in a lifetime opportunity. And so I took it and sort of deferred the Stanford place.
Oh, wow. And I mean, my first question that springs to mind is, did you enjoy it? Like, was it an enjoyable experience working in Downing Street? And obviously entrepreneurship was and technology something of a passion of yours, but how was it in that environment and kind of working with government?
It is a huge privilege to be able to do something like that, but it's just so all-consuming that it can be quite difficult to enjoy it on a regular basis. Yeah, it was quite a high octane time when I was there, so between 2016 and 2019, and so it was kind of through the Brexit years. So I did enjoy it. It was a huge privilege, and it was very hard to leave as well, but it sort of run its course for me. But the ability to be able to interact with the country's best entrepreneurs and kind of find out what government could do to help them, because it's something that I believe the Conservative government since 2010 can be very proud of, is the way that it has supported entrepreneurship, the way that it has made that. And it's obviously, it's not just the government, by the way, that have created this. But when I graduated in the late noughties, you know, the sort of primary thing that ambitious graduates wanted to do was to go and be a investment banker. And now when I go and speak at universities and so on, you know, they all want to be entrepreneurs. And that is a huge kind of shift change. And I think that's a really good thing. So yeah, it was amazing to kind of deal with these entrepreneurs and work out what we could do to help them. So yeah, you're speaking to people like Brent Hobman and Sherry Cattu on a regular basis, and that is an immense privilege. But it was at a hard time, right? You know, Brexit was a challenge. There were lots of the technology community were not supportive of it at all, and so it made for tricky conversations at points.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you also helped shape the British government's relationship with domestic international business. That's incredible. Talk me through kind of how you did that and some of the work that went into that and how that experience was.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the kind of key things that you're there in Downing Street is to meet international business leaders when they come over as well, because the Prime Minister just does not have the time to see a lot of these people as they would like. And you know, a huge amount of the Prime Minister's time is taken up each week with sort of what I would call standard engagements that can't be moved. So Prime Minister's questions, for example, the audience with the Queen, you know, cabinet meetings, bilaterals with other cabinet ministers. Once you put all those in the diary, there isn't much flex to be able to do other things. So that international piece was quite important because you would be explaining what we were trying to do with Brexit, what was going on behind the scenes, because to the international side of things, people were surprised by the Brexit vote, to put it mildly, and were quite intrigued to know what we were doing as a country to kind of continue to support entrepreneurship and investment. So it was quite an important role to allay some of those concerns and fears and see business leaders. So, you know, big American firms would come over to the UK. You know, during the first year post-Brexit, I point out that, you know, both Apple and Google doubled down on the size of their offices and investments in the UK. You know, that was partly through conversations that they had with us. You know, Salesforce was another one in 2018, which kind of made a big commitment. And international, what will be particularly interesting to your audience is that international competition was fierce from the French. You know, not a week would go by without an entrepreneur saying, oh, Emmanuel Macron's invited me over to France. Like, we were seeing that all of the time. And you know, fair play to the Emmanuel Macron on that. You know, that is the nature of competition. And this talent is incredibly mobile. And so I think it's made us up our game again, actually, when it comes to attracting entrepreneurs. So that was a big part of it. And then one of the bits that I enjoyed immensely was the sort of trade trips to countries around the world. And, you know, the civil servants, and a lot of what happens with these trips, and it's quite interesting because I was, when I first started, you know, you would see headlines about prime ministers going to India this week and is announcing £4 billion worth of investment deals. And I always remember thinking, well, surely they're not just happening because the prime minister is going to that. They're, you know, that's not the reason these things happen. Having been on the inside, what happens though is it becomes a useful deadline for people to work to. And so if the prime minister is going to India, China, then it acts as a moment. If a business is about to make an investment and they want to kind of be a part of it and so on, it does kind of bring forward a lot of things. And so one of the things I was always keen was when we filled up the plane with business leaders to take to these countries, was that we would try and showcase some of the best British startups that were out there that had details to announce as well. And obviously, you know, they wouldn't run to kind of billions of pounds to make that big number. But I was always keen to make sure that we got diversity on those. And partly because, you know, going to countries that are like India and China, they are by definition much more government centric in their business approach to things. And so being able to take a startup to China and get them lots of kind of introductions to the kind of Chinese public sector can make a huge difference. So that was one of the big parts of the role.
It's incredible. And just on your previous point about France and Macron, I found more recently there's so many startups kind of popping up in France. It's like a little hub, isn't it, for entrepreneurship and new business. And it's obviously incredible to see. But yeah, that healthy competition, I liked that comment. I thought that was, yeah, very sneaky of him. But yeah, it's obviously amazing to see any sort of business and where they can get the help and the support that they need. So yeah, I guess, you know, having all that experience and this knowledge and everything you'd taken for government was really able to help push the podcast forward. Obviously, you know, you said it was, you wanted to help with future of the jobs, the job crisis that maybe we are kind of going through, and help entrepreneurs out. But you were kind of like the right person to be talking through entrepreneurs through that, which is obviously amazing. Onto the podcast side of the things now, what have some of your favorite and most interesting conversations been about or been with? Have you got any kind of standout moments or guests?
Yeah, there are probably three episodes that I recommend more than any for people to go and check out to kind of get a taste of it. The first is with Pip Jameson from The Dots, which is a fabulous company. The second is an interview that I did with Ben Francis and Noel Mack of Gymshark. And the final sort of third one that I regularly recommend is our episode with Rishi Sunak that we launched the fourth series with at the start of 2022. And to sort of take them in order, Pip's one I found fascinating. So she kind of creates a creative what she calls a platform for no-collar workers. So these are people generally in the creative sector, in the creative and technology sector. And we've used people from there for Jimmy's Jobs, because when I started, I didn't know how to do artwork. You know, that was not my kind of, you know, that was not my skill set, to put it mildly. And so we went on the dots and, you know, I put, you know, can somebody help me with some podcast artwork? And there was a young student who just had his placement year thrown out, and he came and designed it. And it's great. And we've stuck with it now into our sort of fourth and fifth series. And that was a very interesting, made me think about the future of work in terms of the way that teams and collaboration is going to happen as people have more side hustles and so on. So that was only our second ever episode, which was great. And Pip was also, this is a slightly amusing story for you, but I know Pip well, and I went to her and said, look, I've got this idea for this podcast. And the original idea for podcast was Careers Council. And I sort of gave her the 5-minute pitch of it. And she just said, look, I think it's a brilliant idea, but you've got to change the name of it, because I've forgotten the name of it already. And you only pitched it 5 minutes ago. That's how forgettable it is. So we kind of worked on a few different names. And so we still ended up with alliteration with Jimmy's Jobs. Her and Catherine Parsons gave the names. And then the second one I recommend is Ben Francis and Noel Mack of Gymshark, because I just think what they have built there is a incredible business. For those who don't know the story, it's a gymwear company. It's now valued at £1.5 billion. As Ben says in the episode, he thinks of it as a super unicorn because he took no funding for it. And it is an example of where massive companies can be built in the regions. They use social media influencers a lot at the beginning of the 2010s to kind of really profile the brand. And I just think it's a fascinating story. And to tie your previous question as well together, you know, one of the things that I did for the Prime Minister was try and find the next wave of entrepreneurship talent. And Ben did come in to number 10, and he was like, I think he was 25 at the time or 26. He was a bit of a wild card for me to suggest. And I remember the first minute he spoke, I thought, I relaxed, because I thought, oh, this is going fine. And then the second and third minutes he spoke in this room was one of the best pitches I've ever heard from any entrepreneur anywhere in the world. It was that good. And yeah, it's been lovely for the government to kind of play a small part in that journey and so on. And then, yeah, final one, all quite different episodes as well. Rishi Sunak at the start of the year, where we asked him about what the job of Chancellor is. And yeah, it was a very different episode to what we've done before, but it was it's been very well received.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen the clips of I listened obviously to the episode, but before I'd listened to it, I'd seen the clips of yourself and Rishi all over social media, LinkedIn. It kind of went wild. So yeah, it was a really great conversation. And I think sometimes it's always nice for people, whatever their opinion on these people, to be able to listen to them kind of like outside of, you know, an official government meeting or an official government announcement. And, you know, he probably still had his guard up a little bit, but to break down some of them barriers and to hear him talk as an actual person, it's really great for people like myself and our audience and whoever to kind of listen to that and see another side to a person.
Yeah, you're right. So that was the first podcast that we videoed, and is a weird thing about whether I, you know, how I describe myself on my LinkedIn profile, you know, should I put YouTuber now, which always causes my friends to laugh. But you're right, in that episode, yeah, it's very hard for politicians. You know, we, like you say, whatever you think of these people, it can be very hard for them to get their messages across in 5 or 6 minutes on the news channel. And he was, you know, we talked about a lot of stuff about the job of Chancellor, but we also talked about his mental health, and he admitted it had been tough. And I think that is also a major shift to see that as a top level politician talk like that, and to talk about what he does with his daughters as well, because I told him that we were expecting our second daughter, and he was the father of two daughters. So to talk to him about parenting was very interesting as well. So yeah, it's and that's where, you know, and you're doing it here with this podcast as well, to give the space to allow people to talk and think is so valuable.
Definitely. And just a little aside question, how does it feel to be on the flip side of the microphone of the interview?
Oh, it's great because I'm obviously with a political background. I love the sound of my own voice. So, you know, I just keep going. Like, this is much better. I'm going to stop hosting my own podcast. Do you know what I might do? I might do what John Bercow's done with his podcast, where John gets different people on each week to interview him. I think that's the way forward. Maybe that's what I'll start doing.
Definitely. There's definitely scope for that in the future. Sticking to the podcast just for now, obviously it's called Jimmy's Jobs of the Future. And as we've kind of spoken about, the idea behind it was to talk about kind of like the future landscape, what's kind of going to happen, especially with COVID coming. Obviously, that we're kind of going through the Great Resignation as well at the moment. So without kind of asking you to provide all the answers, obviously, I totally get that it's kind of opinion. But what have some of these conversations and interviews taught you about building jobs for the future?
So I think it's really interesting, right? So if I go into a school and they say, you know, what are the two jobs that people should be doing if they want to have a job of the future, right? Which is sort of standard kind of opening question. It's like software engineers or data scientists. There are two things that every startup founder that comes on is short of. And data science is pretty straightforward because kids either know they're good at maths or not, effectively. Software engineering is a bit more complicated on that. But the other thing that I've been really struck by when we talk about jobs of the future is that almost every job has changed, actually. So even jobs that have always existed, like accountants and lawyers, for example, those jobs have dramatically changed in the last 10, 20 years. And it's the tools that are being used to do these jobs are changing all of the time. And so that's something that I've just found is quite an interesting observation. And that, because those tools are changing, that's allowing jobs almost to expand. So one of the most interesting answers was with, I sometimes go on the startups page and see what jobs they're advertising for, because also, you know, you know what startup founders are like. They can have some pretty wacky job titles and actually ask what these things are about and so on. And Alice Bentinick of Entrepreneur First had got a kind of global community lead advertised for, and I sort of said, yeah, well, that's a pretty new job. Well, yeah, what does that involve? And Alice sort of countered it by saying, well, it is a new job, but you know, universities have always had kind of alumni relations officers, and that's sort of what it is really, is like everyone that's been through the Entrepreneur First programs. And I just thought, gosh, that's an interesting job. And a community manager is almost a job that anyone could do. It doesn't require sort of deep level data science or software engineering, but it does require an understanding of different tools and what tools you're going to use to manage that community. And so I just always think that's a really interesting thing. And because I think there's a bit of a danger in the kind of entrepreneurship venture capital world to make everything seem a bit more complicated than it is. It's not just that world. A lot of worlds do that. But I think it's particularly prevalent in VC world. And actually, you can create barriers, that artificial barriers there. And that's quite important to me, to be sort of allowing anyone to have these opportunities. Because there's more information than ever in the world, but navigating all of this is really hard. That's one of the things that I try and ask guests is, you know, what sources do you use? Because it goes back to when I was in my early 20s. I came from a family of politics. So that's kind of what I knew, and I sort of like fell into it a little bit. I mean, I loved it as well, but it can be quite hard to know where to go to get this information. It's why Startups Magazine is so great on this stuff, because you know, when I grew up, all my business and economics information pretty much came from The Economist and reading the FT maybe a little bit. Now there's so many more sources out there, which is great, but it can also be quite hard to know where to go and find some of this stuff.
Definitely. It's kind of like finding the needle in the haystack sometimes. It can be so hard. Like you say, there is a whirlpool of information out there, and some of it is really useful and kind of benefit people. And I think one thing also in the entrepreneurship world, like you say, it probably applies to other industries too, but definitely in the startup world, a lot of people kind of jump before thinking, and so they kind of jump in head first and maybe hire a lot of people or create these jobs and think they need X, Y, and Z, and it doesn't always work out. So then sometimes companies are lost or people losing their jobs. And it's like, if you'd have just kind of waited a little bit or thought about it a bit more, found the relevant information and the relevant people, it might have gone a different way.
So one of the best bits of advice that's kind of stuck with me that I doing the podcast and what I thought, gosh, I wish I knew that in when I was 22, was Pete Flint. So Pete Flint found $2 billion companies in lastminute.com alongside Brent Holdman and Martha Lane Fox. And then he also went out and did it in California as well, with a company called Trulia. And his advice was, if you're at the start of your career, think about a sector that you really like, because it can be quite hard to pick a company. Whereas if you pick a sector, the sector's always going to exist. And so if that startup fails that you're with, then you will have built up a base of knowledge and contacts in that, which means you can go somewhere else. I mean, it's great if you can pick a company and a sector, but I thought that was a very interesting way of framing it that I hadn't thought about before. And so, yeah, that's something I find myself saying a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a great piece of advice. You really hit the nail on the head there. So I guess my final question to you is, what is next for Jimmy? What's next for the podcast? What's next in more personal side of things? Any other ventures? What can we expect to see from you in the future?
Yeah, well, the most immediate side of things is we have got our second daughter coming in April, so about sort of 6 weeks away or so now. So that will be the that's the kind of primary thing that's on the horizon. And next is just to keep growing Jimmy's jobs. And, you know, some people sort of say I'm trying to become the Martin Lewis of jobs, and there's definitely an element of that. And to my point about, you know, trying to get it out there and trying to get people that really need the kind of advice that we have on the podcast is a challenge, because there are just so many different sort of sources out there. But we've got a producer and a researcher now that kind of work on this stuff and are doing TikTok and all this kind of things on it and trying to experiment with it, because it's hard. You know, we're just saying we're doing a lot more on YouTube as well now. So it's there's so many interesting things out there, and so many jobs are changing. Yeah, I've become quite fascinated recently with the jobs that comedians do, because we talk about kind of influencers, and sometimes, you know, we sort of dismiss influencers as a bit of a, you know, not so kind of serious career and so on. But actually what people say when they, what they almost mean when they say influencers, is that they kind of want to be entertainers. And people have always wanted to be entertainers, right? That's always been the ambition of teenagers and people early on in their career. And so we're going to be looking a lot more at that kind of creative sort of space, because I think that, in terms of a sector, is something that is going through a kind of huge explosion at the moment. That whole kind of creator economy, I think, is fascinating. So we'll be doing quite a bit more around that as well. So lots coming. As always, one of my favorite quotes about startups is, startups never starve, they drown. There's no shortage of things for startups to go after. Trying to work out and be focused is the more challenging aspect. So we'll spend a bit of time thinking about that and where we can go next.
Oh, amazing. Well, I can't wait to kind of follow you on that journey and see what other guests and amazing episodes that you guys produce. And yeah, I wish you all the best for your second little girl.
Thank you, Anna. No, it's been a real pleasure. And like, Startups Magazine is such a inspiring thing, and it's such a great source of information for people to get this, because there's so much happening out there and it's so exciting. But as we've said a couple of times, it can be so difficult to navigate what's going on out there.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much again, Jimmy. You've been a lovely guest.
Cheers now.
The Serial Entrepreneur, brought to you by Startups Magazine. A podcast bringing you leading businesses and founders who have a story to tell and explain some of their biggest challenges.
Try not to be too hard on yourself. Like, I've met so many founders who are like, you know, I should have done this, and then the pandemic happened and I didn't do this. And you spend so much time like second guessing yourself, when really mistakes will happen. Like, we're human.
It really does improve over time, and I think sometimes when you're starting out, you kind of almost expect yourself to have, you know, super high standards from the start. You know, you want to do your best at the start, absolutely, but you're never going to be perfect.
Plus, share their biggest secret, their favourite breakfast cereals.
My favourite cereal is an Australian cereal called Nutri-Grain.
Rice Krispies.
It's pretty boring. Weetabix.
I have a clear winner. It is Cocoa Pops.